Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Great tune still, the iconic theme music from Succession, an HBO series, some say inspired by the real-life power struggles within the Murdoch family. With shifting allegiances, intense power struggles and mounting tensions, the battle for control of the Murdoch media empire has reached a boiling point. A revealing piece in the New York Times took us right behind the scenes, offering a glimpse into the high-stakes drama unfolding within one of the world's most influential media dynasties. Well, I'm joined now by one of the authors of that New York Times piece, Jim Rutenberg. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. Now, I think some might look at this and think, well, this is a massive family drama about ultimately who ends up with the wealth when Rupert Murdoch is gone. But the implications go far beyond the Murdoch family. You might explain why, firstly.
Well, yes. And I'll note that this is a fight between a few siblings who actually split the large fortune of Rupert Murdoch equally. What the fight's really about is who will control the destiny of the media empire that Rupert Murdoch built. And that media empire is, I think, almost inarguably the most influential media empire in the English-speaking world, one which has exerted incredible political influence throughout the English-speaking world, and the children have different views about how it should exert that influence. Mm-hmm. One in particular, James, thinks it should be less heavy-handed in its right-wing conservatism, and that's who the father, Rupert, the patriarch who built the empire, is trying to really block from getting control after he dies.
So what he wants to do is to disinherit essentially three of his children when it comes to control of the company, transferring control to Lachlan. So you might take us through how Rupert Murdoch got to that point where that's what he thought should happen.
Well, that's a good way of looking at it. Disinherit the children in the trial, who he's trying to disempower, called it disenfranchise. And basically, it came down to this. Rupert, the four oldest children that Rupert Murdoch has had, they are Prudence, Elizabeth, Lachlan, and James. Lachlan is Rupert's chosen successor. And Lachlan is currently running the company, was running it pretty much with his father in more recent years, has taken more assertive control. At the same time, James, who was at one point considered the heir, a real contender for it, broke from the family largely over politics, particularly in the Trump era, as the company's major cable network in the United States, Fox News, really embraced the Trump presidency, often had people on who spouted the same line that Trump spouted, often false things about stolen elections, et cetera. James came to see Fox as problematic and was known to want to one day, when their father died, perhaps take over the company. Because when Rupert dies, the four children will have to decide who leads it under the current structure of Rupert's trust. And Rupert and Lachlan became very concerned that they had the situation where James could potentially do this. He would need his two sisters to support him. The two sisters are more liberal than Lachlan is, are fairly aligned with James. So that's kind of an open question at trial. And so Rupert decides this is untenable. The best solution would be that Lachlan buy out his siblings' shares of the company and take it over, which would be billions and billions of dollars. Lachlan instead led the charge to come up with a more heavy-handed approach where they would effectively, as you put it, disinherit. It's really disenfranchised because the financials would stay pretty much the same.
Yeah, it's not that they would be, you know, out of cash or anything. I mean, they would still stand to inherit an awful lot of money. But this is about power and control. So the solution that Rupert and Lachlan arrived at was that the terms of the handover of the trust would be changed. And they felt that Rupert was permitted to do this once it was in the interests of his family, of those who were going to inherit.
Exactly. Because what's at play here is something in the United States, I think elsewhere, perhaps in Ireland, basically an irrevocable trust. You set this up if you have great wealth, even if you don't sometimes, so that you remove your family fortune from the tax man. So Rupert has set this up. It's called, it's indelible. It's not supposed to change, but there was one narrow provision that said Rupert could change the trust if it was in the best interest of all. It's very hard to do. But that trust, again, had this provision. All four children share power and control after Rupert's death. So what Rupert set out to do was to create a different structure where Lachlan would gain control and the other three would be disempowered. But he had to prove it was solely to help them. So the argument was, I am taking away your power, but it's in your best interest because you children would be in a position to change the direction of this empire that's quite profitable. And if you change that direction, it will be less profitable and you will hurt yourselves and your fortune.
Mm-hmm. And the article tells this story about how Rupert went to the children, in particular to Prue and Liz, with this idea. Did he expect them to accept it, that it would become Lachlan's, that he would become the person who was in charge?
Well, this was a disastrous trip by Rupert to London, where he has a home himself, of course. But he thought maybe if he could convince the two daughters to come around to his way of thinking, relinquish their own control, then the family could have what he considered harmony. And by the way, the great irony here is that Rupert called this plan Project Family Harmony. And he's not ill chosen. When he went to meet with the two daughters, it just went horribly. Both Liz Murdoch, especially, who, by the way, was a contender to run the companies herself, very keen and accomplished media executive. She really lets loose on him that you are violating the family trust. You are, she felt erased. Like she was erasing her from the family trust, from the family itself, because in the Murdoch family, this is all tied up with what we would all consider regular filial relations. And Rupert's mission failed and it was destined to head to court.
Mm-hmm. And that's eventually where it ended up. Now, people, when they talk about the Murdochs, they always think about Succession, you know, whether that's coincidental or not, the TV series about Logan Roy and the Roy family and what happened there. But it does play a part in this piece that you have co-written, because when some members of the family saw the scenes of Logan Roy's death and his funeral, they went into panic mode.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Succession is incredibly on the nose. You really see that through this trial. And art imitates life, life imitates art when it comes to Succession and the Murdochs. And what happened was, yes, in one of the episodes, the patriarch, very much a Rupert Murdoch figure, head of a media empire, dies, and there's no plan for this death. There's no, the children don't know what to do. They're losing, the stock is crashing. They don't know what to do. They put out a statement, who's in charge? None of these things have been figured out, and it's a meltdown. And this was found to be very disturbing. And I'll note that this is all very complicated, but like Succession, each child has a representative who helps manage their affairs with the family trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are characters in Succession, like famously, there's a guy, Frank, who's always in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
Each child has one of those. And those represent the representative for Liz and to some extent Prue and Liz herself. They find this episode very upsetting because they realize we are in the same position. This is what it would look like if it happened here. And they set out to bring the family together to try to figure something out. There's even a memo called the Succession Memo talking about raising questions for Liz specifically. Could she bring the brothers together because she might have to choose between them? Could Fox news potentially be changed enough that James could be at peace with it? Could they sell off Fox? Could James take up just all these questions at trial? This gets used by Rupert's lawyers to say these children were plotting to get rid of Lachlan, and this was all being done in secret. The judge didn't find that convincing in terms of some sort of plot here. And it didn't go very far in court, but it was a fascinating moment for us to get to see.
Well, and there's lots in that secret Nevada trial, which took place in 2024, that is fascinating, particularly the communications between members of the family, which are contained in some of the depositions and the evidence, the messages that went from one to the other. We get a real glimpse into just how nasty this has become.
You really do. You see, again, how much this sort of politics is wrapped up in, the business is wrapped up in whether the children feel loved by their father. And so there's a moment, some of the best moments that we see in the kind of family communications are most revealing moments are, for instance, when Rupert is trying to arrange a way to buy James out of the trust, because he really seems James as the troublemaker. James is, in some of the legal papers, referred to as the troublesome beneficiary. And Rupert's trying to figure out how to buy James out, but James and Rupert aren't really speaking. They've been estranged over politics, over the way James feels he's been treated. Rupert sees him as, you know, potentially, again, this troublemaker. And Rupert and Prue are talking, and Rupert says, well, maybe, you know, he can call me for an upcoming birthday. And then, you know, it can press this idea of maybe a buyout, and Prue kind of lectures him that that's not what you should do. You should make sure that you just keep it about the birthday. Don't go right into these business matters. And Rupert gets very short with her and says, not stupid. I realize that.
Yeah, because so, doesn't she advise him that he should ask how the children are, or that he'd like to see the children to soften the message? And Rupert gets very annoyed that he's being told to how to speak to his child.
Yeah, that's just an incredibly revealing moment. What I found to be the most revealing, though, is there's a Rupert, all this entire trust, everything, all of the trouble that Rupert has in deciding the destiny of the company he built. Let's face it, this is his company, his empire. He built it. Whatever you think of him and his politics, it showed an incredible amount of foresight, a daring, intuitiveness, ingenuity, genius, I really think you can say. Yet he lost control of the company when he left his second wife, Anna, for a younger woman. And Anna had a say over how this divorce would go, because she lived in California and she would have the right to half of his fortune. Mm-hmm. And instead, she's the one who said, no, you will make an indelible trust to give our four children joint control so they decide amongst them how to go forward. And so, but she has fallen into some ill health, and there's a letter that she writes to Rupert where they've had some contact, and Rupert has lamented to her, now divorced, long estranged themselves, about the trouble in the family and James and Lachlan not getting along. And in that letter, Anna says she supports Rupert in choosing Lachlan. It will be found in court that is not meaning that she says he should go break up the trust that was built under her wishes. But she does support him, his support for Lachlan and needing to consolidate control. And she is very conservative herself, and she sees the companies as important for the conservative movement and for the free world. And Rupert writes back that he very much sees it that way himself, mm-hmm. that Fox is a vital protector, that his companies are protecting freedom, protecting democracy, which is obviously the opposite of what many of his critics would say, but very much how he sees it. And we see that Rupert Murdoch is far more ideologically, at least now in his twilight years, than many observers have thought, because over the years we've all heard that he's really a businessman.
Yes, that it was
the market.
Yes, that it was all about the bottom line and how to maximize profits. Now it's about the ideology.
It is, because it comes clear in court. It's very clear that he would rather see the company kept under his control, his son Lachlan's control, than see it get sold at a very high price to an outsider, almost with no matter what the price is. I mean, he acknowledges there many, it's a public company, shareholders would have a say, but to him, it's not about money. It's about this legacy. And to him, that legacy is not just about him, but about the movement and the kind of free world aspect that he believes Fox and his companies bring to the English
speaking
world.
So much more to this story, Jim, and anyone who's interested, I would advise them to go and have a read of your New York Times article, which is absolutely intriguing. But where is this now after the court case? What happens next?
Well, so of course, Rupert loses this court case. The judge, actually a commissioner in Nevada, rules that the way that Rupert tried to change the trust was not above board, wasn't for the solely best interest of his children. It was about his legacy and these political issues we're talking about. And so now he is appealing. He could win, but it's very much a long shot. He's not expected to. The justice system is highly unpredictable, especially right now in America. But he could win, but he probably won't, in which case the easiest solution would be to buy out, have Lachlan buy out the other siblings once and for all to strike a deal. But the other siblings now have incredible leverage because they've emerged victorious as of now. Otherwise, you know, we don't know what the future holds. In 2030, this trust expires. All the children could sell their shares to outsiders. They cannot do that beforehand. So family control is controlled by these shares that they could sell. They could relinquish it in 2030, and that entire empire could fall into other hands. But Rupert, at 93, soon to be 94, is very sharp, very intent in seeing his legacy maintained. So we would not expect him to fade gently into the night until this is resolved to his satisfaction.
Jim, thank you so much for telling us about it. And there is more to read on this on the New York Times. You can find it there. Jim's piece that he's written with others, Jim Ruttenberg. Thank you very much for being with us.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.